Welcome to That's Orgasmic, a podcast discussing the orgasmic and not so orgasmic moments of all things sex, relationships, and mental health. I am your host, Emily Duncan, and I'm a sexologist who provides online sex coaching sessions to help you cultivate sexual wellness. This podcast is being recorded on Wadawurrung land. We pay our respect to the traditional custodians of this country and elders past and present. We extend that respect to any First Nations, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people joining us today. Please enjoy this episode. Welcome back to That's Orgasmic. Today I'm joined with Reed, one of the co-hosts of Come Curious, and I give a proper introduction when the interview starts, but I just want to give a brief overview and trigger warning for this episode. We're talking about OCD and sex today, what OCD is, how it can impact sex and relationships, and also some tips on navigating that. And then we also talk about consensual non-consent. And this is where the trigger warning is. If you're somebody who's experienced sexual assault, this might be a triggering part of the conversation. For others, I know that consensual non-consent can be something that's healing, but I just wanted to give a heads up that after we talk about the OCD, I'll ask about consensual non-consent and then we'll have that conversation. And there may just be some trigger words throughout that conversation when it starts. But I really hope you enjoy today's episode. And I also just wanted to put a reminder out there that if you haven't already, please go check out my Sunroom. Sunroom is an app. It's also a website, a webpage, where you get to see a different side of me. On here, I have shown like video demonstrations of how to like pleasure a soft penis with hands or vibrators. I have talked about some personal things like sexual insecurities, experience of faking orgasms, my opinion on that, things like ghosting, cheating, like honestly so much. And there's going to be so much more content. So if you have any specific sex questions, anything you really want me to, I guess, break down, talk about, this is a place where you can request that. If you do sign up, the link is in the show notes, and if you sign up on their webpage, not the actual app itself, you save 30%. So make sure you go check that out. But anyway, I hope you enjoy today's episode. Today I'm joined with Reed, who is a UK sex educator, activist, and co-host of an amazing podcast, Come Curious, which is actually the first podcast I ever found and listened to. And honestly, it was like a sexual awakening in itself. So it and that was like 4 years ago when like I didn't even really know podcasts were a thing, and I remember literally every gym session on the treadmill listening and my mind just being like blown again and again. So it feels like a full circle moment to have you here on the podcast with me.
Oh, thank you, that's so lovely. What an intro, that's beautiful. Yeah. I'm so glad we've been with you while you've been on the treadmill. That's wild to me. I love that so much.
Absolutely. So there's so many things I want to talk to you about today. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I wanted to talk about was OCD, because I actually haven't had a chance to talk about it on the podcast before, and particularly OCD and sex. And I think a lot of people, when they hear OCD, they just think like someone who's a clean freak or, you know, just really particular. I know when I was growing up, that's what I thought it was, and people would always make those like jokes and stuff. But obviously that's not the case. So are you, I guess, able to share your experience with OCD and what it actually is?
Absolutely. I can't shut up about OCD. And I had the exact same thoughts and feelings around what OCD was when I first got diagnosed and told I had OCD. I was like, no, that's not true. I don't flick light switches. I don't count. I don't do this, this, and this. This isn't me. And she was like, no, 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 that's not what OCD is. That's a stereotype. That's a version of OCD that we've been seen and shown. OCD is an anxiety disorder. And obsessive compulsive disorder is when an anxiety becomes so scary and so real that you believe it to be true. So you end up doing compulsions like like cleaning or like counting, like doing things in a certain way, thinking about things in a certain way, checking, asking questions. There are so many different forms of OCD that aren't physical. It doesn't just have to be moving things in a certain way. It can be just a thought pattern or a thought process. And the difference between it being OCD and something else is the obsessive nature for it. I think most of us, well, let's not say most, a lot of us have some form of OCD. And that could be something simple as we get a pain in our stomach and then we instantly go to, oh my God, I've got cancer, I've got a tumor, I'm dying. And a lot of people who don't have OCD will go, oh my God, I've got a pain. Oh my God, it could be tumor, it could be cancer. And then wait, that's ridiculous. Why would I think like that? It's just a pain in my stomach. It's probably just a stomach ache. It could be anxiety. And they throw that thought out the window. But someone with OCD, especially and obsessive compulsive behaviors, they will feel that pain and go, oh my God, I've got cancer. No, I definitely have cancer. Okay, I'm going to look online. I'm going to research what it is. I'm going to think about it over and over and over again. I'm going to get myself into hysteria. I'm going to feel physical symptoms from anxiety. I'm going to ask people. I'm going to go to the doctor over and over again. I'm going to, you know, really hound it in. And unable to stop those compulsions, anything that you do that isn't just, oh, that's a thought, like I don't have any evidence for that thought, let's throw that out the window, to I'm going to do everything in my power to reassure myself or to give me evidence to prove that I have stomach cancer. That's just one example, but it is all about the obsessive nature of thoughts. Everyone gets intrusive thoughts, and they can be really uncomfortable, horrible intrusive thoughts. They can be really graphic images of yourself dying, of people dying, of car crashes, of pain, of suffering, of having sex with your dad, of, like, you know, thinking you're a pedophile. It can just range so far. And again, we're human. We get these thoughts. That is normal. But the obsessive part around it, where you can't stop thinking about it, you can't stop touching wood, or, you know, making sure that your bed is completely laid, because otherwise, that, it's the obsessive compulsive part that is the coping mechanism that people with OCD have. Doing those coping mechanisms don't fix us, don't cure us. They actually end up making OCD worse the more we do them. And the more we don't push ourselves to preventing those obsessive compulsive habits, the worse they get, or the more we rely on them to temporarily self-soothe.
Yeah, I can imagine just a cycle.
It's wild. It is literally a cycle. When I did CBT therapy, they went round in this cycle called the vicious cycle. They called it that for me. And they basically described exactly what it is. And the more you have the anxiety and the more you do these obsessive tendencies of overthinking, of overdoing, the more it impacts this idea that the anxiety is real. And it just goes in a loop that you can't fucking come out of. And trying to come out of that loop is so difficult, because it becomes a compulsion, it becomes an addiction.
Yeah,
not easy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I even know, like, myself with certain thoughts, like when you said, like, you know, sex with a family member, intrusive thoughts like that, shocking for it, and it will enter my mind, and the more I react in disgust, I find, or freak out by it, the more that it will keep coming back. So I really had to, like, work on, I think it was actually seeing a resource of yours on one of your Instagram, on your Instagram, it would have been like a couple years ago, if not like 3 or 4 years ago, seeing something, and that helped so much, because that was something I really struggled with, constantly having like these thoughts come in and not being able to let it go. And I found that once I just stopped reacting, sure, it'll happen a few times, but then it's just, it goes on its way, and then it'll pop back in a month or something.
It's like it's training a muscle. It's not easy to learn this skill. Anxiety is a learned behavior. So it means that we can unlearn it. But that comes with pushing yourself to do it. It's like going to the gym for your brain. Mental health is like that.
Yes.
Forcing yourself to be like, oh, okay, that's a thought. I acknowledge that thought, accept that thought. It's an unhelpful thought, but that doesn't mean anything. It is just a thought. A thought can't harm me or hurt anyone else. You're right. The more you freak out and panic over something, the worse it gets, the more it comes back, and the more you can't escape from that thought. I literally have just been dealing with that thought of truly believing that I had cervical cancer to the point where I almost had panic attacks, that I was so unwell with this thought that it was doing me more damage than probably any cervical cancer could do at that moment. I was so unwell with it, you know, bedbound for days and so, so sick and obsessive. And it's just, yeah, it's really not easy, especially talking about things we don't want to mention, like thinking about murdering people, thinking about having sex with people that we shouldn't have, thinking about other people having sex with us that we don't want. There are so many little things that make us feel like awful, bad people, when in reality, it's just a thought. It's a very normal thought to have. Many of us humans have those thoughts and just brush them off, just being like, nah, that was a weird fucking thought, but it's a thought. It's no biggie. Mm. Again, people with OCD go, oh my God, I just thought about fucking my dad. Oh my God, that means I must want to fuck my dad. What is it about my dad that I want to fuck? I can't stop thinking about his penis. I can't stop thinking about the way he has sex. And then you just end up in this horrible spiral that you can't fucking get out of. It's evil. Mm.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it's like great probably for people to hear even just like that people are having these thoughts. I know one thing we talked a bit about in my like sexology course was around like pedophilia, stuff like that, and how a lot of people have the thoughts, but that doesn't mean that you're actually like a pedophile or going to act on it. And it's just trying to I guess normalize that a bit too, like obviously it makes people feel so icky, and you know that that's not a thing that you want to do. So like I guess trying to I guess have that awareness that that's something that can happen, and just to accept it and just let it go. And if you can't, then getting that like professional support.
Yeah, it's like two things. The letting go is not easy. I learned that. I found it really easy to let go of thoughts of, you know, when you think of like a really beautiful riverbed with trees all over it, and they're in these glorious autumn colors, the reds and the yellows and the browns. And when you get that kind of thought, you just place it upon a falling floating leaf, which lands on the riverbed, and you just watch that thought flow gently down the stream, and that's it. And sometimes, yeah, that thought might come back and it might float down, but it also just lands on the stream and still flows gently down the stream. And visualizing that almost like put those thoughts into perspective of they are just a thought, but they will eventually go and they will eventually fade because they don't really do anything. Their thoughts just don't stick around. They do pass. There was another point I was about to say about... I'll come back to it. It will come back to me.
How do you find that like OCD will impact sex?
Oh, wow. Okay. Impact sex. Oh, like every single time. It's really hard, especially for people with OCD, to be able to relax and stay present. You know, we talk a lot about being present and being our present self. When you have OCD, especially severe OCD, you can't be your present self. If you are sitting there thinking, I am being present, but overthinking a thought or an anxiety and getting that real visceral physical reaction of your heart speeding up, of the hot flushes, of the wave of panic and uncomfortable, icky feeling. Sometimes you can feel sick. Sometimes you might feel you need to have a shit, or that you're going to puke, or that you need to pee yourself. You know, there's so many other ways that we can embody those feelings. And that can happen when you're in an intimate setting. It doesn't matter what you do, especially when it's sex-related OCD. So if you have OCD around catching STIs, or especially one that we face a lot is getting HIV or herpes, is the idea of getting these incurable STIs. What if, you know, it's, I'm using protection, but what if that one tiny piece of bacteria, honestly, what if is the most motherfucking evil phrase for people with OCD.
Yeah, because I can imagine.
We latch on to the what if. That is like the thing that we grab onto. And what if isn't real? What if there is no evidence there for what if? There is hearsay, there is stories, there is, yeah, potentially evidence there. But in that moment, a what if isn't fact, a what if isn't evidence. So it's allowing your brain to run with this idea that something might be bad, even if it feels so real. So we shouldn't be panicking about anything until we get and see hard facts. So, for example, if you're having sex with somebody with or without a condom, with or without protection, and you think, oh my God, I'm pregnant. Oh my God, I know I'm pregnant. And especially as women, we understand this fear of pregnancy can come around almost like every fucking month if our period is delayed.
Yeah.
And that is a very normal worry for us to have because it's a scary thought. But really, in all and matter of fact, if we were pregnant, we would be able to deal with it. We would figure it out. We trust our bodies enough to know we will either have it, we won't have it. We will decide what to do with it in the moment. But the fear and the anxiety makes it so much motherfucking worse. And then it makes us feel like we can't cope. So again, if there is no evidence, it is not worth wasting your time on worrying about it. Let's not worry about being pregnant until we have skipped a whole period, until we have used a pregnancy test and seen the evidence there. And it's the same with STIs, until we have waited and had our results back. Otherwise, we end up driving ourselves crazy and genuinely making ourselves sick in the process, because anxiety is, honestly, I think anxiety is worse than flu. It is so evil and damaging to us. And we need to give ourselves some grace and trust ourselves to know what to do in the actual situation. If I got an STI, yeah, that would suck, but you just handle it. Okay, I have an STI. Fuck, I got to tell my previous partners or my existing partners. Okay, I got to go on antibiotics or I got to go on medication now. We're so smart as humans to be able to deal with it in the moment. It is literally only the fear and the anxiety that makes things unmanageable.
Yeah.
Like actually doing it in the moment, we're fucking great at that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can, I guess that's a great piece of advice, trying to remind people, especially when it's like during sex, because I can imagine it's so easy to get in a spiral, get out of it, and then let's say then you can't orgasm or you can't get aroused or you just not present the bane in your of body. My life.
Yeah. Anytime you're overthinking or allowing yourself to run with a what if or a thought, and even if it's just like an intrusive thought that pops into your head, if you ignoring it doesn't work because they fucking come back, you could just be like, okay, cool, that was a thought. Let's stop. We're allowed to stop during sex and intimacy. We forget that we're allowed. We're allowed to be like, hey, can we just have a second? I just had like a really scary thought. Is it okay if we just have a moment? Acknowledge that thought and be like, this is not helpful. I don't need this right now. I struggle so hard with getting and reaching my orgasm, especially clitoral, because my head is often elsewhere. Not just thinking about like, oh, I need to empty the washing machine, or oh, I need to do that piece of work, or it is also intrusive thoughts. And I now recognize when I get an intrusive thought that I can't unthink about or that I can't manage, it's a sign, it's a positive sign, maybe not positive, let's rephrase that, it's a sign that I'm not coping in general. So if I get an intrusive thought, it means that I'm not looking after myself. It means that I am overtired and overworked, and there is something going on why this intrusive thought has popped into my brain. And it means that we do just need to take a step back and really think about how we are as people. Are we getting enough sleep? Are we eating properly? Are we stressed at work? Are we having a hard time in our relationships? We can use intrusive thoughts and OCD for good. They can be a real signifier of something ain't right, and let's look at it in a deeper way.
Absolutely. I think that's an important thing to think about too, that like, yeah, it's almost like a warning system to be like, hey, there's something going on in your life, you need to slow down, or you know, reassess some things. I think that's that's a great piece of advice.
It's like a how did I listened to this audio, which was amazing, that really helped with my panic attacks whenever I got them. And he described it as an overzealous bodyguard. So this bodyguard that is constantly there, like, oh, have you heard that noise? Oh, that could be something. Or like, oh my God, have you seen that? That could be something. And it's like, bro, I know you're trying to help here, but actually you're just causing me a lot of aggro, instead of just a bodyguard that's just like, okay, well, I'm going to keep an eye on that. Notice that. It's not really much there. It's like, mm-hmm. we all have overzealous, overprotective bodyguards, especially when you have OCD. Motherfuckers, man. Motherfuckers.
Yeah. And during sex, if you're having like an intrusive thought, will you just stop then? Or do you have like breathing techniques or things that you can do so that you can reconnect? Mm.
So I used to try and ignore it. I used to just be like, okay, it's fine. Power through, push through, really focus on the pleasure, really focus on the enjoyment. And what I found that didn't help, it didn't solve the problem, it didn't stop it from reoccurring again. What helped me is actually do taking a break, speaking to my partner, telling them, talking to them about it, not just keeping it inside my brain, because they have no idea that you've just had an intrusive thought, especially if you're a master masker. And you could have the most gruesome, flashing, nasty thought that feels so real in your head, and be sat there smiling and nobody knows. And that is just the power of masking. But actually being able to say, hey, is it okay if we just, like, I just need a break. I've just had like a pretty awful intrusive thought. I can't stop thinking about it. And, you know, maybe just reassuring them, like, it's nothing. You've not done anything wrong. This could be OCD. I think this is my anxiety playing up. Is it okay if we just take a pause, if we have a moment? Have a little cuddle or change it up. You know, it doesn't, if you're worried about changing the general vibe of the situation, then being able to be like, okay, right, well, can I suck your dick for a bit? Or can you eat my pussy? Or like, can you play with my nipples? Can we slow down and watch some porn? But the best thing to do is just have a little bit of comfort there. I think that can be really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I would love to change the conversation up, and it's going to be quite different from OCD. So those who are here for OCD might be in a bit of a shock, but I would like to go into like kinks and fetishes. And one topic of interest is consensual non-consent. I love this topic and I'm super intrigued by this kink. I've had fantasies about it myself, but I know it gets a lot of mixed responses, and a lot of people have quite a like emotional reaction, or like they just don't understand it. They get confused. They find it threatening. So are you able to explain what like CNC is, and maybe like an example of how it can look so people can kind of wrap their head around it?
Yeah, understandable. CNC is very controversial. So CNC is short for consensual, non-consensual, which is role play terms for, and I'm going to use a trigger word here, rape fantasy, ravishment fantasy. It is role play. When it's consensual, non-consensual, that means that both parties or all parties involved have gone, yes, this is something I want to do. And they have given enthusiastic consent around that. And it can be frowned upon because, again, it is a scary thing, you know, especially as women, as people, you are taught not to accept or enjoy something that you're not actively willingly wanting, especially because a lot of us have this fantasy and enjoy this fantasy, but feel the shame and the taboo around it being not okay, it being completely against our will, which is part of the reason why we enjoy it. I love CNC. Basically, all of my play is CNC related because that's what excites me. That's what turns me on. And back in the day, I used to be really confused about CNC. I used to feel really disgusted with myself, really confused, really. I would read a real life story or see a real life story of, again, the R word in the news, and then be turned on, and then also horrified at myself for being turned on and thinking that I was like an awful bad person. What I've realized is that there is a huge separation between reality and fantasy. And sometimes the lines can get blurred, but when we feel safe and when we feel good, there is a huge separation. Nobody is condoning non-consensual behavior, whether or not that's like anything. Anything sexual related. Non-consensual could literally be a hug that's non-consented to. But with CNC, you are allowing yourself to experiment with the boundaries of playing with yes and no, and I don't want this, and dubious consent. Normally with CNC, you talk to somebody that you trust, that you feel confident and comfortable with, and it is a conversation for before play, during play, and after. And I say play because it doesn't have to be penetrative sex. Not all sex is penetrative. So this could literally be a scene of somebody holding you down and putting their hand over your mouth. That could be CNC play. And in our heads, especially if we're fantasizing, if we're masturbating, even if it's so horrific and nasty and gruesome and degrading and fucked up in our heads, it is in our heads and it is safe and perfect in our heads. And it's still consenting to, because we're consenting. Both parties are consenting to it because we're making them consent, even if it doesn't feel like that. It changes a little when we're doing it in real life. And of course, that's why we need the before, the during, and the after consent and the talking about. And of course, we need to understand that this is difficult play. This is play that we need to be able to trust somebody that even if we say, yes, I love this, yes, I love this, at any moment in time, we can turn around and say, no, I don't like this. And they will respect that and stop. A lot of it is trial and error. A lot of it is trying with each other and seeing what each other enjoys, because everyone is so fucking different. It took my partner and I a long time to realize that I didn't like choking. I didn't actively enjoy choking. And of course, that's something that we have grown up with porn.
Yes,
that I thought I was so into, that I still think when I see choking, like, that's hot. But actually in real life, when it happens to me, I don't like it. I freak out. I don't even freak out. There is something in me that doesn't actively go, I love this in my pussy, you know? There's something that makes me go like, oh, like, huh, you know, I seize up a little bit. And that's enough for me to be aware that maybe that's not something I enjoy. Everybody is different. And it is also, especially if you're playing submissive, you can't expect the dom to know everything and to read your every move. It's your responsibility to say no, that you don't like something. Even if you said, yes, I love choking. I love choking. Choke me. I love it last time. I'm going to love it the time before. But this time, I don't love it. It is your responsibility to say, like, hey, I'm just not feeling that right now. Scary, though.
Really important there, the communication, talking between, but also, like, just the, I think when it comes to CNC, for people to be aware, there's so much talk that goes into beforehand of, like, safe words, like, let's say it turned you on, be like, no, but you've got a safe word there so that you can exit the scene. And just so much talk around what it will look like. Like for me, when I think of like what my fantasy with CNC would be telling someone, no, you can't have sex with me. And then, you know, then trying to touch my vulva while I'm kissing them and be like, no, like that denial. And then them to keep trying to like overpower me. And that's where like my fantasy is. And I can see how some people are like, oh, but you're saying no. But it's like, no, but we've talked about our safe words. This is part of that play. We know what we're doing, what's, I guess, not even necessarily what to expect, but like, you know, general ideas, because obviously anything could change. But yeah, I think that's, yeah, another really important thing, like that safe word is there.
Yeah, it can be so, that is a normal fantasy to have, especially this idea of saying, no, you don't want it. Especially because we as humans, we've been taught to never do anything against somebody, that rape is a really awful thing. Of course it is, you know, it's going past people's boundaries and consent, but somebody wants you so badly that they're willing to forego law and everything that they've learned and what you're okay with just to have you. And that can be a really sexy, exciting, romantic thing to have. So yeah, it is wild. It can go in any way. It can be just as light as, yeah, touching vulvas, but it can also be extreme and heavy too, for kidnapping scenes, for slavery, for like doing things completely against the other person's will for prolonged periods of time. And all of that is okay when you're doing it with somebody that you trust. I mean, I could go into so much talk about toxic subs and toxic doms, pretending that they're there for you, that they are listening to your boundaries, that they do accept, they know how to do aftercare, but when it actually comes to it, they don't know how to look after you. They're not attuned to your body and to what you want. And it's the same with subs as well. When you get submissives that are just like, I have no limits, do whatever you want to me. That is fucking scary. Mm. When we're playing with this kind of role play and in the BDSM scene, we need to be accepting that things can go wrong, that you might change your mind, that it's okay to enjoy one thing one time and not another thing the other time. It's almost like we need to welcome safe words and welcome those pauses and breaks and those moments where you do feel out of control. So you find your limits. I didn't know my limits until I met them. I didn't know that I didn't like to be choked until I was choked too much. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, okay, I realize I'm not into this. It can take a while. And the main thing is communication. If you don't like something, because that's hard to know. If you are unsure and if you don't know, if you're going, this doesn't feel great, then it's worth bringing it up and worth stopping and talking to the person you're playing with about it.
Yeah, I think that's an important point too. Like, even if you're not sure where your limits are, it's okay to explore that, especially when it comes to things like CNC. Like, it might be scary to start with, or, you know, you might be like, I really want to explore this, but I don't know how it's going to go. But being like, it's okay, we can begin this, we can stop at any time. And because, as you said, you're not going to know your limit until you reach your limit.
Yeah, I feel like all of this BDSM CNC talk goes for any type of sex. Even if it's just vanilla, even if it's just kissing, if you're just kissing and you're like, I'm not really sure about this, then it is your responsibility to pause and be like, I'm not really sure, I'm not really feeling this. I know it's awkward and uncomfortable because everybody wants things to be perfect and for everyone to get along, but we're human, that doesn't happen. So it is important to be able to state, now I'm not into this, or like, if you're noticing somebody not giving you what an enthusiastic response is, and being like, hey, just want to check in, are you okay with everything?
Yeah. Do you have any ideas, I guess, on like why people would want to practice something like CNC? Like, obviously we said, like, if you've got those fantasies there and it's quite common to them want to like act it out, do you know if there's, I guess, any like reasons behind it?
Oh, I mean, there are going to be so many reasons. Yeah. A lot of the reason why I like CNC is I enjoy the idea that somebody is so obsessed with me, again, that they're willing to break the law, that they're willing to go against my word to have what they want. So it's almost like a whole form of attention and validation. And not being able to stop that. I also really like the feeling of the lack of control, of not being able to think about things. I mean, I used to say, oh, because I'm so controlling in my life, and because my, you know, the OCD and like the neurodivergence, the ADHD, I just want to have a brain break and a relaxation, and I want somebody else to make the decisions for me. I've realized that that actually isn't the case for me in BDSM play. I like the lack of control. That is very sexy. That's very attractive. But a lot of people who don't need control in their life, or who feel like they've controlled their life, like being dominant or like being submissive, I don't think it has much to pertain to that. I do know that there is a big difference between being a woman and being submissive. That's like a general thing that we have been learned and indoctrinated throughout our lives, that we are supposed to be subservient. So there could also be that element of socially serving what we think we're supposed to enjoy. And it's the same with men. I say, you know, men and women in general terms. And men are supposed to be dominant. I think it works better actually of men being dominant, when in matter of fact, with my sex work and with my career, so many men want to be submissive and they feel like they have to be dominant because that's the norm. That's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be the big, strong, mask person making all the decisions and bossing people around, when in a matter of fact, we actually do like it the other way around, but men are so caught up in the idea that being submissive is going to make them seem weak, or, you know, it, a whole number of reasons. And and less of a man. I think that's what it boils down to. And it's the same with women. Women are so scared to seem more masculine and to make the decisions because that stops them being this like, oh, flirty, cute, oh my God, like, I'm so nice kind of esque. When a lot of women love feeling powerful and love having that control, but it's just stepping over that line and actually getting comfortable with it that can be really life-changing. Like, bro, it is about the switch life.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. That's the other thing. You can switch. You don't have to stay in one like energy of being dominant or submissive. And I can imagine, even when you're just talking then, like, that there would be, especially like heterosexual men who are wanting a CNC fantasy where they're the submissive one, because I feel like that's such a like taboo topic in itself and not something you necessarily see, or, you know, when we're looking at the news, it's not something we're really coming across. So I can imagine that that would be a fantasy, but then there'd probably be a bit of shame that comes with that because that's even more taboo.
I find that when people get sub drop and they need the aftercare is when they feel like they've done something that they shouldn't have. And I find that especially men who get sub drop, it's because they have felt really vulnerable and emasculated. And then that hits them so hard afterwards. I mean, I feel like if you're truly into BDSM and CNC, you're a switch. The best dominants are the ones that also try being submissive. The best submissive are the ones that also do dominance, because you can finally step into each other's shoes and actually feel and experience what that's like for other people and for the other side, so you can be a better dom or a better sub. I mean, I used to be really strict on, I love being submissive. I'm only submissive. That's not true. I love being dominant. I enjoy switching. I know that to my core, what turns me on, the main turn on is me being submissive. But that's only after I've explored being dominant. And I love fantasizing about guys being completely dominated and like, yeah, completely humiliated, degraded, pegged, ruined. Like, I love that. But it isn't something that I generally enjoy in my play. Like, that's a fantasy moment. Mm. Although, is it that I don't enjoy it in my play, or is that I just haven't experienced it enough yet? You know, I'm willing to try it all.
Yeah, and I find it between, like, obviously you have your fantasies and then they can feel different with play, but it can even feel different just, like, with the person, where you are with, like, hormones, all different things. I find that, like, interact with that, they can make such a big difference in how that fantasy feels. And even when you're talking about like switching and going from dominant to submissive, I was always like, yep, submissive, and then I had sex with a woman and I was like, oh, maybe dominant, because I just had such a dominant energy come out. And I was like, that's so interesting that in that dynamic it's different to how it is when having sex with a man.
Yeah, I also wonder if there's an element of protection there. You know, like, we're submissive with men because that's what we've been taught to be. It's easier to be submissive with a man. We feel more comfortable in that role. And again, with a woman, I know exactly what to do. I'm going to protect myself and I'm not going to look foolish. So I'm going to make the rules and I'm going to tell you what to do and I'm going to do this to you. There's so many layers to this. And it's only until you start unraveling those and you can really find out what you're actually into and actually enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have any tips for talking about, like, let's say we have a fantasy for CNC and we've never mentioned it to our partner, maybe they don't even know what it is. Do you have any tips on, like, how to bring up that conversation and discuss that with the partner?
Oh, such a difficult thing. It is really hard to bring up kinks, fetishes, and situations like this with an existing partner. It is so hard. I also have experienced this of being in a 7-year relationship before, where I had my tickle fetish and I just couldn't tell him. I tried so hard. So I promised myself that anytime I was single and I was seeking someone new, that would be the first thing that I would say if it was really important to me for sex. Now, with an existing partner, I think it's important to have an overall healthy conversation around sex. Talking about it a lot is important. Ignoring it doesn't help anyone. So talking about it, you know, day to day, after sex, before sex, even if it's just something small, like, oh, how was that sex for you? Like, did you enjoy yourself? How are you feeling? Where was your headspace? Having that healthy connection allows you to talk about deeper, darker things more easy. So with CNC, One of the ways that I would deep dive into it is if we watch something, or if there was something on the TV or in a game where it was like a little bit CNC, a little bit dubious consent, being like, oh my god, that's so hot, what do you think? Or coming up with hypotheticals can be really exciting, just being like, so like, say if we were playing and I said no, stop, but I wanted you to continue, how would you feel about that? So that's kind of like opening up the idea of role play. Mm. And you can kind of gauge how people react on their body language and what they say. A lot of people are uncomfortable about it. And being uncomfortable doesn't mean they don't like it. It means that they just feel uncomfortable talking about it and verbalizing it. So it could be that they don't like it and that's it. Or it could be that they're showing they don't like it, but actually that's the thing they wank over in porn, or that's the thing they want. And they've just built up such a wall around not talking about it. Leading by example is a great measure. Not waiting for them to respond and telling you that they like it, just telling them direct that you're into it, that you like it. Be like, yeah, oh my god, I can't stop thinking about this like situation, you know, like teacher comes on to me, I'm schoolgirl, like shouldn't happen but it does happen, why does that turn me on so much, like wow. You know, it's about finding what works best to talk to your partner, what they respond well to. Yeah, it's a real difficult thing to do, but I guarantee you, if you overthink it too much, it just becomes so much harder. If you just go one day like, hey, have you ever heard of CNC? And you just jump into it and start that conversation. And even if that conversation is unsuccessful in your mind, you know, like maybe they didn't turn around and be like, yeah, I love CNC too. And they're just like, oh yeah, maybe, okay. That doesn't mean to say it was successful or unsuccessful. That is one part of the giant puzzle of talking about this. It can't just be, I'm going to talk about everything, get it all out there. It's got to be piece by piece for some people. And you need to make them feel comfortable and trustworthy to be able to talk about those things.
And it's an ongoing conversation. Like, especially if they've never thought about it, or they've haven't talked about it, or even thought that could be a reality for them, that first conversation, they may really like have a wall and be like, oh my god, no, like, oh, like I can't think of that. And then they go and they, you know, they think about it, and then you can have another conversation and another conversation, and like keep having it, and like structuring maybe how it would look, or having, yeah, different conversations about that. I found the time I mentioned it, I think I might have listened to a podcast, and I found that an easy way to be like, oh, I listened to this podcast, it was on this, to then try and like, you know, get an idea of how they were thinking and feeling about it. And
yeah, that's a good one.
Then it wasn't necessarily met with like, I wouldn't say a negative response, but just like a concerned. And obviously with things like the Me Too movement, everything going on, especially as a man, being like, oh, this doesn't feel safe for me. Like this doesn't. And then having to, I guess, explain, let them sit with it, and then come back to it later.
Yes, coming back to it later is very powerful, especially because people do need processing time. If it's not a conversation they've been thinking about over and over again, for it to just suddenly fall on their lap, they might just be like, wow, I don't know how I feel about this. So I've been met with the same feeling before, where it's not been enthusiastic. Yes, it's been like, oh yeah, I'm not sure about that. I don't know if I'd feel comfortable. And that doesn't come from a place of like disgust. That comes from a place of fear. Probably fear that, you know, they have been taught, especially if it's a man you're speaking to, where it would be so different if the genders were reversed. But if it's a man and you're saying, yeah, I want you to basically fuck me while I'm saying no, please don't, that is terrifying, because there is a lot of danger areas they've been told over and over again with the Me Too movement, with everything that's come around about consent, that we're only just learning about consent now, really, in the last couple of years, that goes against everything that they stand for and everything that they've been taught. They don't want to hurt anybody, of course, but what they're not realizing is actively role-playing that CNC and that hurt and that pushing can be pleasurable for you both. It's Yeah, it is a grey area, but sex is a fucking grey area. There is nothing definite with sex because you're both trying to guess what the other person wants. You need to be able to communicate and talk more. And the better you can communicate, the better sex you will have. It's the same with women. If you flip reverse that, if it was a woman coming onto a man and him saying, no, I really don't want this, we think about the situation so different. It's less scary, it's less intrusive, and that's probably because women in general, the intrusiveness comes to something penetrating us, going within us. It's different for guys. Nothing penetrates them unless you're going for like anal pegging butt stuff. That's a whole different story. Something going around them feels a little bit more protective and safe. But it shouldn't be that way. We shouldn't see it as any different if a guy is leaning back and going, no, this isn't for me. We should respect that, unless it is CNC and unless you're playing that as part of a game. I mean, the whole world flips on its head when we talk about guy stuff and anal stuff and pegging.
Yeah.
Then people take it seriously. But until then, you know, it's about playing with those boundaries and those fantasies and understanding that fantasizing about that kind of stuff doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you a human that enjoys crazy shit.
Yeah, absolutely. And most of us enjoy crazy shit.
Oh my God, yes. I'd just live on crazy shit.
Oh, absolutely. I'm the exact same. I couldn't imagine life not having the fantasies that go on in my head to keep myself entertained throughout the day.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, it's crazy. I love it. Yeah. I love it so much. Give me more fucked up, please.
Now, we won't have time to talk about the tickle fetishes and parties, which I'd love to another time because I'm so intrigued by that. But to finish off the episode, I'd love to know what's something that's orgasmic to you.
Oof, orgasmic. Oh my God. Well, I mean, you literally just mentioned tickle fetish, my tea parties. That is orgasmic to me. I have a tickle fetish, and tickling is orgasmic. I have literally had orgasms from being tickled, just tickled. And I know for a lot of people, tickling is a no-go zone. It's a hard limit for even the most hardcore BDSMers that I know of, especially because it's confusing and complicated. Probably the reason why I have a fetish around it. But yeah, I feel like that is what's orgasmic to me, is tickling, whether it's like soft and playful and gentle, or whether it's like hard and evil and nasty. I love it all.
Amazing. I love hearing that. And I know there'd be other people out there that absolutely have this fetish and would love to see it hear it being talked about, even if it's only brief. So where can the listeners find you, your content, podcast?
So you can find me, best place is Instagram at readamberx, spelled R-E-E-D Amber X, and that is my tag and my hook for everything. So you can find me on Twitter, TikTok, mainly OnlyFans. That's probably the best place to find me, is Instagram and OnlyFans. And I post stories every single day, and I post as much as I can on Instagram. And OnlyFans be popping off right now. If you want to see any content from myself or when my boyfriend and I play and we do CNC stuff, we've just created this crazy video where we dominate him. Yeah, just come join us, say hi, say what kind of content you're looking for, and I'll help you out.
Amazing. Definitely go check that out.
I forgot to mention the podcast.
Oh, yes, I know you've absolutely done that a lot.
Of course, we have a podcast that's out every Thursday. It's called Come Curious. And I do that with my amazing co-host, Florence, where we just talk about sex and sex work and sex lives. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking about OCD and CNC and a little bit on tickle. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for doing this as well. Like, I think it's so important creating podcasts around this and actually opening up the conversation, because it's hard. It's hard for us. It's hard for our heads and our brains. So thank you for doing you and taking the time and effort to do this. Like, keep going, girl. It's so needed.